Hello, listeners of Channel 88.1 FM, KFHC Ponca Sioux City, and KOIA Storm Lake. We are so glad that you are listening to us. Maybe it's Monday morning at 9 a.m., maybe it's Saturday at 7 p.m., or maybe you went to our website, SiouxLandCatholicRadio.com, and clicked on this show, which is Faith in Action, or we really like it if you take advantage of going to one of the dozen podcasting platforms that we are on, and that includes Spotify. And the reason we are able to do that is because our sponsor of this show is Mary's Choice. It's a pregnancy resource center here in Sioux City, Iowa, and they are so supportive of everything we do. And we, in turn, are very thankful and very supportive of all the wonderful things they do for moms, dads, families, and just the whole area in general. So thank you so much to Mary's Choice. So again, this show is Faith in Action. I'm Joanne Fox. I'm the host of this show. And if you listen with any regularity, you know that I bring in all my friends. And that's what makes this show interesting, is just bringing in my friends to talk about things I think are interesting of themselves. This really isn't time sensitive, but I have three fine, handsome gentlemen in the studio that are all veterans. And of course, Veterans Day is November 11th, and that's kind of why I brought them in. But we're just going to talk in general about, well, how we should support our veterans and our individuals who are serving in the military. We thank them so much for their service. And so they each have very unique and remarkable stories to talk about with all of you. So I'm going to start with my good buddy, who is Dr. Jerry McGowan, and he is a longtime physician here in Sioux City, Iowa. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jerry.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
It's good to be anywhere some days, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And then me and Dr. Jerry is my longtime friend and fellow Polish person, Don Stevens.
Jak się masz?
Dobrze, dziękuję. There we go. We get you just a little bit of Polish there.
Good to be here, Joanne.
Thanks for coming, Don. I appreciate it. And finally, one of my favorite Santa Clauses, Larry Harrington. And I say that because he used to visit us frequently. And he dressed as Santa, and he brought us candy canes and treats, and there's a lot of wonderful things he did, and we're going to talk about all of that. So, also, Larry, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to be anywhere someday. So, I always start this show with, I'd like you three to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. So, Larry, why don't you start? No, you start first, Larry. Just tell the listeners where you grew up and where you went to school and what you did for a living and stuff like that.
Well, growing up, my parents, we farmed and we kind of moved around farming, so I went to a few different schools, not as many as my wife. She went to 17 different schools, but we did go to different schools. I worked in packing plants and got my degree, and then I went into inspection service, and I got in the Air Guard. And then my three sons got in the Air Guard and served our country. But being that, I rose to the rank and finally ended up in the Air Guard down here. I started in the Army, but we slept in tents where the Air Guard and Air Force were sleeping in hotel rooms, so it didn't take too much to turn me in that direction. But I enjoyed the service. Worked at it. I was in chemical, nuclear, biological warfare. Putting the recruits through chamber training to make sure their gas masks were working. That was a key issue when we got in because the Cold War was still going on. But serving ESGR, support the Guard and Reserves, and then just serving in a community, the church, and try to balance the church with the Air Guard in my family, which is kind of hard. But my wife, Linda, she used to moving, so it was pretty easy when we went on deployments. And we went on quite a few deployments. That's about all I got to say about that.
Okay. We thank you, Larry, because I think I first stumbled across you when the Air Guard alerted me that you had gotten that Extra Mile Award, which is this wonderful volunteer award. And that's when I was still working at the Sioux City Journal, and I interviewed you. And then later on, we became friends because you kept coming up to the offices of the Catholic Globe newspaper with candy canes and dressed as Santa.
Yes, that's true. And then I did a lot in the community. That's how that award was given out. And then I got the award for volunteer for the state from the governor, Terry. And, yeah, it was a good award because it was United States. I mean, it was all the states in the United States that give out that award for the, I hate to say, the number one in that category, but that's what it was. So I felt honored there. But it is a lot of work, and I still try to do that in the community. So,
excellent. And Don Stevens, of course, I've known you since we were kids growing up in St. Francis Parish. And my mother and your mother went to St. Francis grade school. I mean, you and I go way back. But tell the listeners a little bit about yourself so I don't have to.
Well, thank you. And it is great to be here, and it's an honor to be between these two gentlemen. They're great community, I guess you'd say, pillars of our community. They've done so much in their individual areas. They've also served in the military, so to be a part of this today is really a privilege for me. I'm from Sioux City, grew up on Pollock Hill at St. Francis School, went to Helan, then went to St. Mary's University in Winona, Minnesota. I married my wife, Mary, a Kemper Knight, and a Helan Crusader. So we certainly have a little excitement during sports season going on about who's better teams. I have four children. All of them went to Helan High School. A couple of them went to Creighton University. So, you know, we've been involved in Catholic education and Catholic radio for a long time. After attending college, I went into the Army at the height of the Vietnam War. All four of my roommates went into the military. One became a Navy pilot. One was in the Army and took care of all of the accounting in Denver, Colorado. Another one was in accounting in Stuttgart, Germany, and I got sent off to Vietnam. So the roll of the dice was certainly 25% against 75%. They had some pretty good jobs. I went to officer school, got into intelligence, and then in Vietnam, I got sent to a fire artillery base in north, as far north as you could get. So that's how I started out. That's how I've been a part of this. And if I may interject something before we really get going, is our sponsor, Mary's Choice. I think our audience needs to know this coming Friday is their banquet where they have a fundraiser. So if anybody, not this, the 21st of this month. So if anybody is not knowing about Mary's Choice, it's a great opportunity to help our sponsor and go to Mary's Choice Banquet and maybe help them out with some funds.
Yep, and if you're unable to attend for whatever reason, well, you're going to miss out on a great evening because I am the hostess with the mostest evening. I'm the MC. God bless Don Grimes. Yeah. And I had Martha Burchard on the show as well to talk about the banquet. But, yeah, of course, listeners, we always want you to support our sponsor, and Mary's Choice is one. So, Don, thank you for saying that. Listeners, if you pay any attention to the show at all, I actually had Don on previously because it was such a unique story that you had about this individual who came to visit you in the hospital. And then was it close to 40, 50 years later?
You speak about coincidence, but there are no coincidence. God has a plan for all of us, and he puts people in the place that you need to be at that moment. I had just suffered a small heart attack, but I had a triple bypass, and I became depressed, and I was really frustrated. I'd kept my weight down. I'd done all the things I thought I was supposed to, and here I was, you know, just bemoaning God. Why me? You know, why me? So I have the triple bypass, and I'm in therapy at the hospital, and I'm on a treadmill, and I'm working out, and this guy next to me says, "Are you Don Stevens, the ex-postmaster?" And I thought, oh, man, I've been gone 20-some years. What did I do to this guy that he would remember me?
Lost his mail, maybe.
Oh, I thought, well, what did I do? And I turn around and I said, Frank Moss? Frank Moss had the same thing. He had a heart condition, and he was in therapy. 55 years ago, I was in the hospital in Da Nang at the 95th Evacuation Hospital, suffering from wounds. And my mother, who worked at Travelers Insurance, was working with his wife, Darlene. And my mom said to Darlene, because Darlene's husband, Frank, was in Da Nang. Mom knew I was in the hospital there. And she said, would there be any chance that your husband could go see how my Donnie is? I mean, he's in the hospital. I don't know much about what's happened. And Darlene said, I'll see what I could do. She contacted Frank. Frank took a Jeep, went to the 95th Evacuation Hospital, and visited me in the hospital. And he said, hey, here's what happened. Your mother, my wife, et cetera, and how are you doing? And I'm saying to myself, here I am, thousands and thousands of miles from home. I'm sitting in a hospital, and a guy from Sioux City visits me. I mean, it lifted my day. 55 years later, Frank meets me. We start the story again, and he had just lost his wife, Darlene. And we were able to have a friendship develop again. And I hadn't seen him, and he lived a mile and a half from me for 55 years. And here I was able to help him with his grief, and he was able to help me go through what I was going through. So, you know, it was really an interesting experience.
Yeah, and for that show, we had both you and him on the phone because his health didn't allow him to come into the studio. And it was a powerful, powerful memory that both of you shared.
God is in your life.
Oh, yeah.
All the time, and you don't know, and you challenge him as sinners all day long. Why does this happen to me? Why is this happening? He has a plan. If he can be patient with his plan, he's got a reason for everything that happens.
Yep. So thank you again, Don, for sharing that story, because it reminds me of, you know, how the Holy Spirit does work in very mysterious ways. So that brings me to Dr. Jerry McGowan. And so, Dr. Jerry, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, my story is probably not so exciting. I grew up in Sioux City. From age 4, I grew up in Morningside, went to Maca Conception Grade School, Heland High School, and from there, I went to Carroll College in Helena, Montana, took pre-medical training, and the next 4 years in Iowa City at Iowa University Medical School, which was an interesting place for me. I guess I had not really been out of Sioux City very much. I enjoyed Iowa City, but really very busy most of the time, so I didn't get to travel too much. To go back, I enjoyed Montana and had my choice of where I would have practiced medicine. I might have gone back to Montana, but my wife Cheryl thought perhaps it's a little too cold there for her. She is a girl from Fonda, Iowa, my father was a banker, and he worked for Troy National Bank for many years, probably 30, and then bought the bank in Pomeroy, Iowa, which was 10 miles from Fonda. And just out of college, I met Cheryl, and my last year of medical school, we were married, and we kind of decided that Denver was not a particularly good place to practice medicine, and Phoenix, Arizona, where I did my internship, wasn't a particularly good place if you wanted to do family practice. So we came back to Sioux City, and I've been in practice for 54 years and retired 3 years ago. Enjoyed the people very much in the practice of medicine. My trip to Vietnam was interesting also. Dr. John McFarland, who was a urologist in town, was a flight surgeon at the 185th when I came to town, and he wanted to retire. And he kind of got me cornered one morning and said, you know, you really probably ought to look at this. This is an interesting practice. You learn a lot of physiology, and I take care of the pilots mostly, which didn't seem like too tough a job. They're mostly pretty intelligent and well cared for people who can pretty much take care of themselves. They're turned out that a few years later, I went to Vietnam with 25 pilots, and we were at Phu Cat. Phu Cat was 10 miles from the South China Sea, and our big base from Phu Cat was Quy Nhon, which was right on the South China Sea. At any rate, it was an interesting tour. I was over there with 25 pretty much healthy pilots and 350 airmen. And we had a fair amount of care for the airmen, even though I wasn't assigned to the dispensary. I did enjoy taking care of the people from Sioux City. And as I came back, that was a basis for a lot of my practice in primary care, family practice. In 1974, I was recruited by the University of Iowa to start a family practice training program. And with some trouble, we got that arranged at two hospitals at that time, actually three hospitals, St. Vincent's, St. Joe, and St. Luke's, joined with the University of Iowa and formed this family practice training program, which we took people out of medical school, recruited them six a year, and over the time that I was involved in that program, I think we trained about 250 young doctors, and a good number of them stayed in Sioux City. I'm retired now for 3 years, and doing a lot of whatever comes by. I do my yard work and things like that, but find very interesting books to read and try to keep up with the world. It's going pretty fast right now. And stay out of politics and so forth as much as I can. But enjoying life, and I'll continue to do that. And I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk about Vietnam, and some of my friends that for life, actually, that I met over there.
And what I find interesting is you were all fairly young men, you know, when you started an association with service to this country. And so when you think back, Larry, I'll start with you. How did that change you?
Well, it gives you a sense of purpose, and it gives you a sense of working together with fine men, and they all got the same goal. And it's not so much killing, it's more or less keeping the peace within our country. And what our great forefathers did, there's a gentleman this morning getting buried, Colonel Bud Nelson. Bud Nelson, I keep getting him mixed up. They're both great leaders, but it was great. He sacrificed a lot, and you're away from your family a lot, and I didn't realize it till later on. When you're overseas a lot and gone for a year, 6 months, 4 months, it really puts a burden on the families, and it's how you get together as a group and work through those things. Because when you're thousands of miles away, and we didn't have the cell phones like they have today, it was hard to communicate. You get in a line and wait for a phone, and you dial the number, and the line was busy, so you had to start all over again. And you could be hours. And today, when my sons were in Afghanistan, they were calling right now, and it was immediate. So It's a group of people. You can't put words, but they're always there. When you see one another, it's kind of a handshake deal, unwritten, but you stick together, and it never goes away. And it's good, and the leadership is good. There's a few hiccups now and then, but that's with anything when you're growing and changing and working with different personalities. But the military is good. It's a good deal. I don't believe in wars, but yet keeping a good peace is a good thing. Perhaps the ones that don't want to serve in the military, perhaps they should go to the Peace Corps and serve. But get out of this country and see how the rest of the world lives. It's an eye-opener, and that's what I always enjoy. But when you was gone, everybody took care of one another. From the ones that are home, they made sure your family was taken care of, and that was nice to have.
Yeah, very comforting.
Yeah, it is.
And Donnie, you had were just finishing up college or in the middle of college and, you know, a young man, and so off you go. And what kind of surprised you, or what was an eye-opener for you?
Well, you know, 21 years old, you're at college, you're drinking beer, you're chasing around, you're having a great time, and every day is a party.
That's true. You're
thinking, wow. And then all of a sudden, you're faced with the fact you're seeing everything on the news. Because in the Vietnam War, that's when the news start showing everything, what was going on. You saw the death, you saw the destruction, you saw the country being broken apart, and here you are, you're going to go there. Now, you know, I'm a boob from Iowa, a little kid from Sioux City, Iowa, that's at college having a great time, and all of a sudden you're going off to Vietnam. You know, what's the first thing you have? You're thinking in your mind, well, first of all, I don't want to go.
Right.
Second of all, I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just not a real good, something you can accept real easily. But the fact is, you know, when they say freedom is not free, it's important. Mm-hmm. It's something we had to do. You know, at one point, people were going to Canada. One of my cousins went to Canada. You know, at the time, people were saying, man, you know, why'd they go and what that? But you think of the sacrifice they made at that time to go to Canada. Their convictions were so great they didn't want to serve, with the fact that at that time they were never going to come home. You could not be brought back into this country to see your family. So, you know, you could see why some people who really did not want to go to the Vietnam War, which was unpopular, the country was torn apart by it, and they had to go, and here you were going. So you had to do what you had to do. And I think what Larry said earlier about how you develop in life. Now, I'm single. I didn't have a family except for my parents, so I didn't have that stress of family life. But one of the big things you had was when you were there is, you know, what am I going to do? How are you going to get there? I mean, I don't know anything about guns. And you go through the service and all the branches that teach you everything you're supposed to do to protect yourself and lead people. And you come and you accept life as it is. Life's missions, the good things that are thrown at you, the bad things you were thrown at. I was wounded a few times in Vietnam. You know, but God protects you and sends you. God bless those families that have lost ones. But how it affected me, it made me a better person. It made me a person that could accept responsibility. It made me a person to be able to understand some good and bad and how to handle it. When we came home, it was not a very good, fun feeling. I'm in the Denver airport, and two policemen come hit me on my feet and say, get the heck out of my airport, in rougher terms, because I'm a baby killer.
Oh.
I mean, that's what was going on there. So you ask yourself, all these things I did and served my country, and I went over there, and this is the greeting I got back. And when I came home, my dad was a good friend of Judge Don O'Brien, and they were going into the courthouse, and they were protesting out there, screaming and yelling at veterans. And Judge said, you know, Don's son has just been wounded. And they said, I don't care. Should have died. I mean, this is the reception. One of the things we learned after coming back in our receptions, we would never let it happen again. And the Vietnam veterans, and I think the gentleman at this table would say, that we were the ones who started to clap for when we saw military in the airports years later. We were the ones that did everything we could to make sure those people who went to other wars, Afghanistan, Iraq, and so forth, knew that they were appreciated. So when we saw them coming in the airport in their division, in their clothes, we all stopped and cheered for them and thanked them for their service. So things you learn. Learning how to handle adversity. Learning that there's a bigger picture. Now, one of the biggest things I think I've learned is, and supported was my faith. Every day I woke up and said, today may be my last day. God, keep me, help me get to heaven. And very seldom where I was on a fire base did we have Mass, but we had a Catholic priest come once for Mass. I was the first guy to go ahead and make sure I was there, and it was raining. And we put a poncho and used our bayonets on weapons to hold the poncho above the priest as he was consecrating the host. And we could receive the body and blood of Christ. And it was like, wow, this is special. So your faith is really developed when you're in the military as well.
Fascinating. What great insights. Now, Jerry, you were a little older because, as you referenced, Dr. McFarland approached you and said, hey, I think you'd be a great flight surgeon, which God love him for seeing that in you. So tell me, what was the eye opener for you that might have impacted or changed you as you, you know, became a part of this pilot flight surgery?
Well, I really had a pretty easy assignment, taking care of 25 pilots, and I did a fair amount of extra things there. Ran the clinic off the base for the Vietnamese, and we went down to the Leprosarium from a few times to help those people. But the person that I should give credit to is my wife. I left her with four babies when I went to Vietnam. The oldest was just starting kindergarten, so she had quite a year. She's very busy, I think, taking care of those. We sent messages back and forth on tape recorders, and I did get to hear the kids once in a while, but really didn't get to know them until I got back. And there is one interesting story. I guess the kids would consider me a disciplinarian. We were having a nice dinner meal, and one of my children did not want to eat some of the food that was presented. And I said, you know, you better do that, and this and that and the other thing. And my three-year-old said, maybe I should go back to Vietnam.
Oh, boy.
So my wife was very popular, and I was not.
Out of the mouths of babes. Yeah. But that's a great point, and Larry made it as well, is, you know, the people that are back here in the States, and their love of what you were doing, serving your country, and their love of you, and yet that disconnect of, like Larry said, no cell phone, you know. I love the tape story that, you know, that was your ability to hear everybody. But it was, there was a disconnect there, right? So
there certainly was a disconnect. I had to come home and meet my children. And it was quite different. I was not used to the noise that the family has, and that bothered me. It took me probably a couple of weeks to get used to that noise around the house and so forth, but that was a minor problem, really. But it was one that was noticed by myself, and
And that's interesting you should bring that up, the adjustment from the military to civilian life. Something as innocuous as the noise of the children. That's a really interesting insight, Jerry.
Well, it was there, and it did concern me a little bit. But I pretty much didn't do much about it. It just went away.
You seem to have worked through it over these many, many years. So, Larry, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about the adjustment for you as you kind of, although you were in the Air Guard for quite a while, but yeah. That the adjustment to civilian life.
Well, I was in the States most of the time in training, you know, like I said, getting them ready to go overseas. So, but I must say, I was younger in life, and so I didn't have the problem with the kids. But Linda, she took care of the kids from, you know, being away and did a good job. We had three boys and a girl. But it's always something coming up that's a crisis at the time. When you look back, it wasn't much going on at all, but at the time it was. So those were problems. But when we got called up for NOM there, I had just got married. So I was adjusting both ways, once the active duty and then being married. So it was quite a challenge for me, maybe not for Linda, but for me it was, to have another boss in the house. But it's just something that in the service you got that camaraderie that you just work together, and if one guy's got a problem, the other guy's had that a few years before, you know, and so it was kind of nice. And so, yeah, it was just, you're always doing something, and they keep you busy to keep your mind away from things too. So that's good. You don't understand it at the time, but when you come in those roles yourself, you can see, keep them busy, and they won't have time to think about doing stuff not so good.
Yeah, so I just want to give a shout-out to our listeners. If you've been with us from the top of the hour, thank you so much. If you're just joining us, we're about halfway through the program. And again, this show is Faith in Action. I'm the host, Joanne Fox. And in the studio with me are three of my good friends, Larry Harrington, Don Stevens, and Dr. Jerry McGowan, all of whom have been in service to our country. And that's kind of what we're talking about, especially with Veterans Day on November 11th, although the insights and the stories they're sharing are timeless. And so, Don, tell the listeners a little bit about your adjustment from the military to civilian life.
Okay, you know, it was difficult for me because I was on a fire base right outside of a jungle as far north as you could get. And we were overrun a couple times. And I, like I said earlier, I had been wounded and been sent to the hospital and back. And you know, we had great doctors, not like Dr. Jerry McGowan. I'd love to have had him there with me at the time. But
we were not a pilot.
So. I was not a pilot, so Dr. Jerry would not be able to come and see me. But it was difficult coming back. You know, I have, I had one of the wounds I had blew out my eardrums, and I had 50% nerve damage in both ears and hearing problems. I also had, still have post-traumatic stress because when I came back, a car backfired at the Hamilton Mall. In the old days, there was a theater out there, and Mary and I were going out. We were dating. She looked around for me. I was under a car.
Wow.
I had the issues of, I was jumpy. I was anxious. I feared. I didn't trust. There was a whole lot of things that come with what you're taught and how you have to live to survive that just don't go away. I mean, they hang with you for a while. And just recently, I found out my heart issues. Like I said, I was stressed because I kept my weight down. I was in pretty good shape. Is ischemic heart disease. Am I pronouncing that right? Ischemic heart disease?
Yes.
Okay. And that's a direct result of Agent Orange.
Wow.
We were in the area in I Corps where they were dropping a lot of it, and I didn't. I mean, these are the things that I have learned to live with now, that things that are happening. And the VA has stepped up tremendously for a lot of veterans. We have to have our hats off to the VA for what they're doing to help us now. 50 years ago, the VA was not there. They really didn't have the tools to help us. And so many of us were just so glad to be home after that. We never really pursued things for health. And now the VA takes care of you in many of these things. But my return was, you know, I just, it wasn't comfortable. And I'm not the only one. There were a lot of them. I just got back not long ago from the military's honors flight to Washington, D.C., and it was just such a privilege for me to go out there. And as we were all sitting around talking at the banquet the night before, there was a gentleman from the Air Force who worked with a lot of the generals and in intelligence, and they had all of these maps on the walls, and they were talking about how artillery was being called in and the planes would go out there and drop them. And then the guy said, "What'd you do?" And I said, "Have you ever heard of a FADAC computer?" And basically I was in intelligence, and I called in a lot of those airstrikes with planes from the ground or artillery. And he looked at me and he says, to his wife, he says, you know, we thought they were all dead.
Because
ground sensors were only used in 68 and 69. They were very, very sophisticated, and that was the only year they used them. And he says, we thought all of you guys were dead. So then my son John was with me with the conversations he got. So then, you know, you start talking more about what really exists. And again, you're a young kid, 21 years old. Somebody tells you to do something. Okay, I'm here to do it. You didn't know. You didn't know what was going to happen. And the results of being there were interesting. It took me a long time to get comfortable. Mary still finds me blow up at times for stupid reasons. That, you know, maybe I'm anxious, I'm jittery, I'm nervous at times. The kids, as Dr. Jerry said, you know, go back to Vietnam. I know the kids would get upset with me when I'd do certain things when I was disciplining the kids. I didn't know what I didn't know. And I've been in counseling for a while. And it finally I found out that these are the things that are normal.
Well, that's good to hear.
You don't think you're normal. You think, mm-hmm. What's wrong with me? But these are the things that are normal from people that went through that. Now, I'm not trying to say my story is any different than anybody else. There's people who've had much worse. Dr. Jerry is being very, very humble when he says, you know, it was very easy there. But these doctors that were there made the difference of life and death for everything, whether it was a wound, whether it was an illness, whether it was something. They made the person that was there under the conditions I just talked about better people. So humility is with most of the doctors that served. They didn't think they did that big of a deal, but they were very critical in making young men and women better people and helping them heal.
And all three of you have such remarkable stories to share, and I thank you, you know, for sharing them with the listeners. But here's my kind of last question to you as we come closer and closer to the end of the program. I'm going to start with Jerry. Someone says to you, gee, you know what? The military sounds like it might be something I would be interested in. And after you hear some of these stories, personally, I would say, well, maybe not. I mean, maybe there's other things you could do. What would you say to someone who was even considering service to this country?
Well, I think it would be ideal if all young people some way found a way to serve their country, whether it would be the Peace Corps, the military, community action, something like that. I think that would be wonderful. But one thing that I did learn in the military was we live in a wonderful country. And no matter where I've been, there's no place that's close. Even though we complain a lot about this or that or the other thing, we are blessed to be here.
Yes, very much so. And now, you're going to have to remind me, because I can't remember. I am not sure any of your children were in the military, but I know you have grandchildren who have enlisted.
Yes, I have a grandson who's a major in the Marines, and he is a graduate of Annapolis. I have another granddaughter, actually, who just graduated from Annapolis, and she's going to stay in the Navy and I think become a pilot. But I'm not quite sure, and I'm not sure she is just where she is in that training period. And then I have two other grandsons who are presently in Annapolis and working their way through and doing a good job. So we have an attachment, I guess, to the military. I'm certainly proud of that.
An interesting Navy. What happened to the Army and the Air Force and the Marines there?
Somehow they got to the Navy. My oldest grandson was actually at a state track meet in Des Moines, and someone who was in the stands recruited him to go to Annapolis. Otherwise, I don't think he would have gone. I don't think he thought about it. He went there basically on a scholarship for track and enjoyed it. And through the training, decided instead of being in the Navy, he would join the Marines, which the commission training for the Marines is actually part of the Annapolis. 25% of the graduates from Annapolis go into the Marines. So we're pretty well attached.
I guess so. So, Don, somebody comes up to you, young person, they're kind of struggling with what they want to do with their lives, and they know of the military, and what would you say to them?
Well, our country has turned into, because of everything that's happened, all about me. It's all about a me issue. You know, recruitment's a down. But I can only tell you what I found. I developed character, organizational skills, ownership of your life, obligation to others, and respect. I think the military can provide a great career. I mean, Air Force pilots all the time go into flying. We're seeing airlines now don't have as many pilots because the Air Force has gotten rid of all the pilots. The Navy has some great opportunities, you know. There's some things out there for kids, and it provides a wonderful life. It helps you develop into a better person. My personal feeling is I don't think it would be a bad deal if everybody had to serve something in their country, like Dr. Jerry said, whether it be in the Peace Corps, whether it be in the military. You don't have to carry arms, but there's things with computers and drones and all these games these kids play on TV and the video games. There's all of that's being adapted to do things in the military. So I think it's a career that's out there that helps any country. Look at Israel. Everybody goes.
Yep.
And you know
that's
what? They develop the country and they're stronger as a country.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why people don't want to serve, but I think the opportunities are great to help you and the country develops. That's the same thing.
And Larry, you did mention that your sons went into the military, but that was a different time because they're older. So,
yeah.
But today, young people, in conversation with them, if they indicated they might have an interest, what would you say to them?
Well, like both of them mentioned earlier, it's the greatest country on earth. I've been overseas, and they all want to come to America. For the ones that don't like it here, I'd say leave. But yet, all these countries, America is so great, and we do have freedoms. Over there, you got to keep your passport in your pocket because it's rough out there. And we're friendly. The living conditions are good. Those people over there want to get in this country so bad. They know where all of our big cities are. So they're studying it a little bit. Otherwise, they wouldn't know. But my kids, they went to the service to get the GI Bill. Two of them were flyers. One become a lawyer. And they served, and they all put 20 years in. But it's a good thing, and there's a lot of trades in the military. You can become a lawyer. You can become a doctor. The person I worked with my finger the other day, she went to medical school through the Army, of course, and got her degree, and then she had to spend 5 years on active duty. So there's a lot of good trades in there. A lot of our security down there became cops in Sioux City because they get that basic training, good computer schools, good CE. And so it's a great training deal. And like both of them said, you got to serve in something. All those Belgium, Germany, they all serve, whereas in the Peace Corps or whatever, because it's not normal to kill people. And some people, and nobody likes to do that. So go to the Peace Corps. See how those people are living in different parts of the world. And you'll come back and kiss the American flag because, you know, going there for a week or two on a field trip is good. You get exposure. But live there for a year. It makes all the difference in the world. So there's a lot of good things in the military and a lot of good training, whether it's Army, Navy, or the Marines. So
that's the truth, too.
And you get good discipline. You don't like it at the time, but there's a reason for it.
Yep. And listeners, as you were hearing these stories, I'm sure you're thinking of perhaps your own military service. I'm not sure who all is listening. Or perhaps your loved ones who are in the military. My dad was in World War II. He served in Greenland during World War II. My father-in-law actually did serve in the Pacific Theater in World War II. My husband, during the Vietnam War, Dean, he served in Alaska. And then one of my sons was in the Air Guard. So I have an incredible respect for anyone who makes the choice to serve this country. And that's why I think it was so important to kind of share with you listeners the stories that are behind individuals who did serve our country. So again, I'm so grateful to my three friends who came into the studio to share their very personal stories. I am very humbled. I thank you for your service, Larry Harrington, Don Stevens, Dr. Jerry McGowan. Thank you so much for sharing with the listeners what it means to be of service to this country.
Thank you very much.
And so, listeners, that kind of wraps up the show again. I want to remind you that this is Faith in Action. And if you are listening Mondays at 9 a.m., thank you. If you're listening Saturday at 7 p.m., thank you. If you went to our website, SiouxLandCatholicRadio.com, and listened, clicked on Faith in Action again. And then a shout out to Mary's Choice Pregnancy Resource Center here in Sioux City, which is the underwriter for this show. We are so grateful for them because that allows us to be on about 12 podcasting platforms, including Spotify. So, again, I'm the host of this show, Joanne Fox, and on behalf of my executive producer, Ann Reed, and myself, I want to remind you that, yeah, faith in action is good. A faithful reaction is good, but faith in action is so much better. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.